Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back to our final episode of the 2023 NFL season, which, of course, we're recording in 2024. Yeah, go figure that out. Harley, how's the new year treating you, man?
Well, I've recovered from going out drinking over the weekend for New Year's, obviously. And I'm actually feeling pretty good today. I'm a little bit kind of sleepy, a little blurry-eyed right now, mainly because I just left a two-hour massage.
Oh, cry me a river. I wish I felt bad because of the massage. I just feel bad because my body aches and creaks, and that's what happens when you get old. And now it's cold out, which makes it 1,000 times worse. So,
well, that's exactly the truth. And for me, we drove down to see the in-laws over Christmas, spent 10 hours in the car over two different days. And I think that was a huge part of it. My right hip was showing off all of the 49 years of my life. And today, at least, I feel better after finally getting that unlocked. Shout out to the fine people at Elements Massage. My masseuse, Sarah, she did a very good job today.
Cool. That's right. You went to another country to visit your in-laws. I forget. Which country was it again?
It's the Republic of Iowa.
Iowa, that's it. That's right. That's in the United States. Never mind. Yeah, me trying to be funny.
I'm not totally sure it is.
Well, that's one of the few
states. It's
kind of
like when you enter the Bermuda Triangle and you just end up someplace else. I think you cross the state line into Iowa and you kind of get swallowed up by the corn. Well, there really wasn't any corn this time of year. So.
Gotcha. I years ago, I think I had added up to where when I was in my mid-30s, I had been to like 36 or 38 states. I'm possibly been the 40-ish of them now, one way or another. Iowa not being one of them, though. I don't have a passport to get there. Okay, we've ridden that enough. Hey, let's tell everybody what we're going to do today. Since this is our last episode, we're going to try and help people out or give them some ideas for their fantasy seasons next year and beyond. We're going to discuss unique or different fantasy league settings. That's how we'll title it. And then, of course, we'll do our DFS stuff for the degenerates that like us for our DFS content and like that only, whether it's because they use it or they go the opposite of it. I don't know. With me, they probably use me as a Costanza, but we'll see. I don't like the slate this week for what it's worth. I say week 18 is probably the hardest to handicap outside of week one or two.
So week 18 is on par with the preseason because you really don't know. You can make a good estimate for who is going to be forced to play an entire game. You can also make a little bit of an estimate of who will probably not play an entire game. The biggest problem, though, is those players that might play a partial game. Will they play enough of a game to be effective? Will they not play enough of a game to be effective?
One series, one quarter,
fortunately,
half.
We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the DFS.
Yeah. And before we get to any of that, what I need to do is I need to throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitz Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. Kevin Stefanski has been mum as to whether or not he would rest veteran Joe Flacco this week, with the Browns locked into their fifth overall seed in the AFC playoffs. If Flacco does sit, the team could turn to Jeff Driscoll, making him the team's fifth starter at the position this season. All I can ask is that the lucky person who has to update the famous Browns quarterback list t-shirt after this season gets paid some overtime. Despite a performance last week that would make Nathan Peterman blush, Bailey Zappi will once again get the start for the Patriots. When asked about this decision, former starter Mac Jones replied, "Well, who in the hell do you expect them to start? Me?" Allow me to congratulate Chargers wide receivers Alex Erickson, Keelan Doss, and Quentin Johnston on their performances this past weekend. I am certain that you will all have no problem finding jobs in a couple of months with the XFL-USFL merger. Drake London and Kyle Pitts combined for just 5 catches on 15 targets last week. Who knows? Maybe Arthur Smith was right in not utilizing them. Or, more likely, they just weren't expecting to be targeted, seeing as how Smith has ignored them all season. And finally, Christian McCaffrey has been ruled out for Week 18 with a mild calf sprain. I feel comfortable speaking on behalf of McCaffrey owners everywhere when I say thank you, Christian, for helping us finish second this season. This has been your BPN News Update.
You know, spot on, good ending, because I debated whether or not I was going to ask you about your fantasy championships and if I was going to get into mine either before or after the news. It's perfect after the news. I was in the Huddle Expert Leagues, I think there's 5 of them. Maybe there's 6. I think there's 5. I made the playoffs in 3 of them, had the number 1 seed in 2 of them, got knocked out of the 1, so I was in the finals for the 2 that I had the number 1 seed. And in one of those leagues, I had Christian McCaffrey. And yes, I lost that one. So how many did you come in second place with because of Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I played in 4 championship games this weekend. I won 1 of them. I lost 3 of them. 2 of the ones I lost in, I did have McCaffrey starting for me.
Okay.
Unfortunately, one of the ones also had Tyreek Hill starting for me. So,
yeah,
not a whole lot you can do.
So here, I'm gonna read you some numbers. So we go through week 13, I think, was when the play. When did the playoffs start? Let me make sure here. Hold on. 13, you go 14, 15, no, so 14. 15 is a bye, 16, 17. So yeah, so okay, so through week 14. Are you ready? I'm gonna throw some numbers at you, and I want you to tell me which one of these teams won the championship for me. Ready? I have 1 in the power rankings. This is on MFL. Under power rankings, number 1. All play record, 100 wins, 54 losses. That's a 649 winning percentage. In points for, it was let's see if it sorts it here, the top scoring team in the league. In possible points, it was the top scoring team in the league. In efficiency wasn't very good. In bench points, it was the second highest scoring team in the league. Okay, now we're going to move on to the other team, the other league. In that league, come on, internet. Okay, in that league, it is ranked the number. Oh, got to go to 14. Week 14, getting the right spot here, Steve. Hold on. It is ranked as the 3rd. Overall team in power ranking. In points for, it was, it's a 10-team league, and it was 10, 9, 8, it was 7th in total points for. It was in possible points, it was next to last. In bench points, it was 10th, I'm sorry, it was 8th in bench points. And the all-play record was 55-71 for the season.
Ouch.
Which team won the championship? The first team or the second team?
Well, so I feel like that this is one of those things that's a trick question where you want me to guess the second team because it'd be kind of obnoxious. So I'm going to assume that is, in fact, a trick question and go with the first team.
Okay. What I'm also going to tell you is the team that won the championship scored 200 points. It was the only team the entire year to score 200 points. So it scored the highest possible points in the league in the championship game. Mm-hmm. And it was that team that was not good. It was the one with the 55-71 overall record.
And that's amazing because there were 3, maybe 4 huge performances this weekend. Guys like Lamar Jackson, Isaiah Likely, Kyren Williams, obviously. These are guys that are owned, though, by teams, right? So,
well, you had to say Kyren Williams, right? So
well, yeah.
Let me give you let me give you the lineup of the team that lost, and then I'll call out some of the notables from the opposing team. The other thing is the one that lost was an IDP team. So we start full IDP, defensive line, linebacker, and then DBs, right?
How many?
We start 11 total.
Okay.
I actually had Kyler Murray slated in as my quarterback, and I really should have left him because I was like, well, if he screws up, then that's good for my Eagles, but if he goes off, then at least it's good for my fantasy team. And last minute, I changed to Derek Carr, who had a fantastic first like quarter and a half, right? It cost me about 10 points, roughly. I started Breece Hall. I started Christian McCaffrey, and I started DeAndre Swift. On my bench, I left Tyler Algier. Okay. Now, I will say this, too, and we can talk about this as strategy. Because I had my lineup set with all my early guys, I had a couple of guys that were questionable for the late games. Basically, what I did was I dropped all of my non-early team players for guys that had late games. So if I needed to switch out, I had choices. Makes sense, right? Because there's no other week after this.
Yeah.
So that's why Algier only shows as my only bench running back, because I had dropped a couple others. At wide receiver, I started Debo Samuel, DK Metcalf, and DJ Chark. Mr. One catch for 18 yards. At least he got a point, half a point for an assist. On my bench, I had nothing. I dropped all my early guys. I think one was Elijah Moore because I missed him on the third. Was he this week? Yeah, he was Thursday. I didn't start him. So I wound up grabbing Hardman, Brandon Johnson, Marvin Mims, MVS, thinking maybe I might swap one of those guys in if DK can't go. Well, I didn't have to. At tight end, I played David Njoku. That's a good start, right? 19.4 points.
Great start, yeah.
But I left Isaiah Likely on my bench, and I could have started him over Chark. So that burns a little bit, right?
I was going to say, I don't know if you want to use the word burns when talking about David Njoku.
You know what, though? Did you see any of the interviews? He actually looks really good. His face looked good. His hands and arms looked a little bit messed up, but his face looked really good. You couldn't even tell he was in a fire. Seriously.
That's still amazing.
It really was. My wife and I were both like, he's the one that was burnt? I was like, yeah, he's the one that had the face thing on because he had
burned. I've seen some of the pictures from after that.
Yeah. No, he looked great, quite honestly. But you're right. That's a bad word to use. At linebacker, I started Jordan Hicks because he's been back for 2 weeks from being off IR. Had a good week last week. This week, 5 points. Blah. I started Hudson from Washington since he was in a starting role. Should have been a better game than what I expected. 15 points I'll take, though. Micah McFadden came up short for me, 4 points. And Alex Singleton had a good game, 18. I debated on whether I should have started both Denver linebackers. I left Josie Joel on my bench. I should have started him over McFadden, quite honestly. Isaiah McDuffie had an okay 8.5 points, and he went out early because he got hurt, right? And then at DB, I had Reed Blankenship, had a great game, 18 points. Jaquan Brisker should have had a great game. He had 9 points. And then Derwin James had a great game, 26.6 points. But here's what I was up against. Okay, the guy started Jalen Hurts. He had Gus Edwards and Bijan Robinson. They both scored double digits. And he had Kyren Williams, so there's 30 points. He had DJ Moore, there's 30 points. He had George Pickens, there's 20 points. He had Dallas Goedert, had 15 points. He had Josh Allen at linebacker, or DE rather, there's 30 points. And that's where he kicked me. I mean, that's what it came down to. And he had Justin Reed, who seemed to get a sack on like every one of the last 2 to 3 plays in the Kansas City game. He had almost 30 points, 27 points. So he put up almost 300 points. It was the second highest score in the entire season for us. And I put up 231.98, which is a little bit below what I've been putting up lately, but it's a respectable score. You score above 225 in this league, you usually win. I came up short. But now here's the team that completely obliterated the team that was actually the number one in power rank. They finished 8-6. I finished 10-4 somehow, right? They scored 111.58 points. I scored 200 points even. That's with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, Ty Chandler with 9.4 points, Breece Hall, DeAndre Swift, CeeDee Lamb, DK Metcalf, Debo Samuel, David Njoku, Harrison Butker, 24 points, and the Jaguar defense for 22 points. Absolutely ripped it. And I left more points on my bench. I could have started Gus Edwards over Ty Chandler. I could have started Elijah Moore from the Thursday game, who had 17 points. And both Goddard and Darren Waller on my bench both had double digits. So just crazy that sometimes, and this I'm leading up to, it's not always about having the best team. It's about having the best team in the moment, the day that you do it, and luck is on your side.
Well, and it wouldn't have helped Christian McCaffrey owners, but that might be a good segue into talking about potential settings for your league and whatnot changes. One thing that a few of my leagues have begun to do is look at, with the extra week added to the league calendar, having a two-week finale so that you can kind of get rid of a little bit of the luck of the draw, per se, if your players happen to have one bad week in week 17.
You know what else I like, too, even if it's a single-week championship type thing, is that you carry your season, your regular season average through the playoffs.
Well, that was something that definitely been added the last couple of seasons to the Scott Fish Bowl. And for the first couple of rounds of the playoffs, you get your regular season average. And then over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you get half of your regular season average, which I think is a fair accumulator value to help your team. Again, it takes some of the luck out of things, which makes it a little bit more perilous. And I think about from the standpoint of people who like myself, who like to play poker. If you're in a cash game at home, you're not going to get away with it at a casino. But if you're in a cash game at home and you're playing against people and you both get all of your chips in with reasonably good hands, a lot of times the players will elect to run the hand twice or three times so that, again, you're not losing your entire stack just right. because it was a good hand versus good hand situation.
Yep. Hey, for what it's worth, too. I had Christian McCaffrey in one league. I was playing against him in the other. That's always fun.
Before we segue too far into the new topic, though, I do need to bring up one league that I'm in.
Go ahead.
This is the original, the first ever Empire League that was founded when Paul Charchian came up with the idea 11 years ago. And it's a 12-team league. Very, very short benches. We start 8, and it is a 7-man bench for a total of a 15-player roster. In the 10 years that we've played, no champion has even made it back to the championship game until this season.
Something tells me it was you.
It was not.
Oh.
This year's champion, I actually made the championship game in the first year and the fourth year. It's a super flex league, so I was kind of ahead of the curve with some of the owners by drafting early two quarterbacks. I think at the initial auction draft, I left with Matthew Stafford and Aaron Rodgers, both at right around $20 a piece and a $100 original buy-in budget. So. But yes, the team that made it back, a gentleman out of Chicago named Courtney Mann, he has a team that has Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes as his two starting quarterbacks. His running back core is Rashad White, Aaron Jones, Raheem Mostert, Chase Edmonds, and Rico Dowdle. His wide receiver core is Mike Evans, Noah Brown, Brandon Ayuk, Terry McLaurin, Jalen Hyatt, Josh Downs and Brandon Cooks, and Gerald Everett was his only tight end. Now, again, we start 8. It's a super flex. He started Allen and Mahomes as his two quarterbacks. He started Aaron Jones and Rashad White because Mostert was deemed out.
Right.
At wide receiver, he started Brandon Ayuk and Mike Evans, and he originally had in his lineup Terry McLaurin. Now, he decided to sub in Noah Brown later in the day, who got hurt early in the game and left the game.
Yes.
And he had Gerald Everett at tight end. Everett had a big game from the Chargers. But his team scored 59.75 points in a half PPR, super flex. His opponent scored 67.50 points. Christian Peterson of LeagueSafe.com scored 67.5 points to take the victory and to keep Courtney from winning the back-to-back titles and the Empire pot, which as of that game was sitting at just over $11,000.
Oh, ouch.
Here's what makes it crazy. If he had left McLaurin in his lineup instead of subbing in Noah Brown, he would have won with a score of 70 points even, by 2.5 points over Christian. So I kind of feel like people might have wanted to check in on Mr. Mann before the weekend was done, because that's one of those things that, I mean, you can't, how do you live that down? I mean, that like sits on your mind for the entirety of the next decade, at least. I mean,
well,
making one player change and costing yourself $11,000.
But I don't know that there's many of us that would have done it any differently, quite honestly. Right. I mean, one, you can't foresee that Noah Brown's going to get hurt and have a 1-for-8 day. And what is
against Tennessee, who is not very good against the pass. Right. I agree.
And I mean,
CJ Stroud is back.
And I mean, who really feels comfortable this season starting Terry McLaurin? He's been a huge disappointment. Their quarterback.
They could have also made the argument, though, he could have played Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
Who did have a good matchup. And Brandon Cooks would have actually helped them win by an extra half point over that. So.
Yeah. But remember, that's also a game, at least I thought there was a good chance that it was going to be a lower scoring game.
But then there's also the other element to this, is that if Mostert isn't deemed out,
right,
Mostert is probably his extra flex position player, and he probably wins the
going
league
away
and takes the umpire thing with that. Again, yeah. I'm pretty certain that Mostert would have combined for a total of he lost by 7.75 points in a half PPR.
Right, and he only got 1.8, not even 1.8. He got 1.3. I think, from Noah Brown, basically.
It actually worked out to 0.75 with the yardage scoring they use.
Oh, okay. 0.75. Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. But yeah, either way, I mean, it was a cruel, cruel situation for him. And again, I'm happy the league continues on. Obviously, so my team did not make the finals this year, so I'm looking at having to win a couple years in a row. But my team's chances entirely hinge on Atlanta firing Arthur Smith.
There you go. Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that's out of the realm of possibilities, that's for sure. Hey, another weird thing, like I was going, so I had Christian going for me and going against me. Jalen Hurts was the quarterback against me in both those leagues.
That's going to suck.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And the thing is, the league that I lost was the one I really had the best team in that I've been trying to win for years, because it's the IDP league. I don't believe I've ever won it. I've got a couple of runner-ups, but I've never won it. And this year I was truly, I mean, I was on a roll. I think I had scored like 3 or 4 of the last 5-6 weeks, high scores. And then, you know, but hey, it is what it is. I lost a B-side.
Well, and I think that's probably another good setup for the conversation. But thing is, you're a huge IDP guy. I've dabbled in it myself. There's players that players. There's a couple of leagues that I've been in that I've been very, very competitive from that standpoint, but I've never done one with a full IDP roster. Most of the ones I've joined have had a 4 or 5 man defensive player choices, where you choose one defensive back, one defensive lineman, one linebacker, and then two any position.
So here's how I feel about that. You would think that as a IDP guy, I would be like, yeah, add it. I'd rather you do it than not do it. I said, when people ask me, how should we do this? And they say, we're thinking about adding 1-1-1, right? At least yours was 1-1-1 and 2 flex. But 1-1-1, I say, don't bother. Don't do it. You're going to turn people off, because there's always going to be a stud at each position on the waiver wire that people are just going to pick up, and they're going to say, what's the reason for, there's no reason for even doing this. There's no tact to it, right? So yeah. I always suggest, look, dive in. At a minimum, do 2-2-2. And a flex if you want, right? And you can do combined DL, so it's a defensive tackle or a defensive end. You can use either or. And your linebackers are linebackers, and your DBs are cornerbacks, and safeties are the same. If you want to get more intricate, and I've been in leagues like this where you start minimally 2 defensive ends, and you start 1 defensive tackle, and you start 3 linebackers, and you start 2 safeties, and you start 2 cornerbacks, and you get a flex. And that flex can go anywhere, because in reality, you could start a line of 4 defensive linemen, so you have 2 defensive tackles, right? And stuff like that.
That was going to be my question, is like, well, how does a league like that that has a much deeper pool of talent taken from, how do they deal with the number of hybrid players that we see nowadays in the NFL, guys who are – stand-up defensive ends that also play linebacker, and guys who are safeties who also come in and play the middle of the box on the linebacker core. How do you deal with that in terms of positioning?
So I guess in a sense, the best way I'll say it is, one, all the leagues I'm in, I think for the most part, 99% of them, if not, are on MFL. So we go by what MFL designates them. And MFL generally makes that designation based on depth charts, which I know aren't worth much, but whatever the standard base depth chart would be. And because of that, we have some tweaks in our scoring. So you will make linebacker position, their bread and butter is tackles, but maybe you make linebacker sacks more than you make a defensive end sack. So that way you're adding value to the edge rusher because he's not going to get a bunch of tackles, right?
And I think that's another way to look at it too. Is like, so when you talk about cornerbacks and safeties, same thing.
Yep.
When I think defensive backs, I think safeties are going to get more tackles than cornerbacks will.
Yeah.
So do you give extra points then for plays specific for a cornerback?
You can. And by that, what you do is you make the bigger plays. It's called big play scoring. So you make an interception worth more than a tackle, basically. Right. So, but there are some cornerbacks that are very involved in the run and run support. And they're the ones that are usually the ones that are most valuable when it comes to fantasy. You know, it's kind of like running back. Think about running backs. Christian McCaffrey's valuable not because he's a great running back, because he's a great running back and a receiver. Right. So that's kind of what you're looking for. But I don't want to make this just about IDP from a fantasy league setting and tweaks.
No, but that's a good segue point to start from, because then my next question is, well, yes, that's great for increasing the value of those players that would be depth positions. I think that the most common change that leagues have made over the last few years is going away from a single quarterback to a super flex format. Sure. And I think that that is one that if your league hasn't adopted yet, you really should, because I mean, I know how you feel about quarterbacks. You know how I feel about quarterbacks. It's just a thing that gives them on par value.
It does add to their value, absolutely. One of the things I'll also say, the larger your league, and I feel this way for all leagues, but especially the larger your league. So I used to exclusively, outside of expert leagues, played in 16-team full IDP leagues. You're talking waiver wires are thin when you've got 53-man rosters across 16 teams, right? So roster flexibility is really important. And I know a lot of leagues say you got to start two running backs and you got to start three wide receivers and then you get and one tight end and then you get a flex, right? Here's one of my recommendations. Try this. 0 to X number of running backs can be started. 0 to X number of wide receivers can be started. 1 to X number of tight ends can be started. That way, when you get hammered with injuries, you don't hurt a team completely. You know what I mean? The running back position may be thin and there's nobody to grab. So if they want to start all wide receivers or multiple tight ends, give them the ability to do that. I'm in a 16-team league. There were weeks in the past few years I've started 0 running backs. Think about that. The bread and butter. Now, there's a trade-off, right? Running backs tend to be more consistent than wide receivers. But at least it gives you the ability to still be competitive and field a line and build your lineup the way you want to. If you really want to think about it,
is there an advantage to approaching it from that standpoint? If you're not taking a high pick on a running back, that obviously allows you the chance to get maybe a couple of elite level wide receivers?
Sure, yeah, exactly. So you're drafting at the end of the round, right? And you decide to go wide receiver. Now you're not cursed at the running back spot. So that person that grabbed McCaffrey or whoever at 1 or 2, right, they're at an advantage because of that. Or the person that maybe dips into the quarterback spot first and gets one of the top two guys off, and it gives them an advantage. It helps to level the playing field. It lets you build a roster how it best will work for you. The other thing I recommend, and Scott Fishbowl did this last year, and that's what made me think about it, allow kickers, if you have kickers in your league, allow your kickers to be flexes. Because there's almost always going to be a kicker available. And if something happened last minute where you lost one of your players, I've had it happen more often than not. You're like, there's crap on the waiver wire to pick up, right? So I can at least pick up a kicker, and you know you'll probably get 6 to 8 points.
That's interesting you mentioned Scott Fishbowl, because there's a couple other elements that I think all leagues should look to do if they haven't done already. And that's look at either A, going from a pure draft to an auction format, but if you are intent on keeping a draft format, going with what they've done in the last couple of years with Scott Fishbowl, which is the third round reversal.
Third round reversal's nice. That's an added thing you can do. Also, graduated scoring, tight ends, right? 1.5 points per reception.
You might hear the term tight end premium, where, again, you're basically – it's encouraging people to use tight ends in flex spots because they might have a chance to produce equivalent points to your best wide receivers, despite the fact that typically in NFL offense, with the exception of maybe four or five tight ends, we don't see tight ends leading their team in targets, receptions, and or receiving yards.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a part of multiple startup dynasty leagues where we've wanted to try and be innovative and try to find a scoring system that truly makes it like a flat line across from a value standpoint. I mean, we took months discussing, you know, settings to where a defensive tackle in IDP is pretty much, if their name's not Aaron Donald back in the day and a couple other guys, they're not really worth much. And even then, compared to a top-flight linebacker or running back or wide receiver, they're never in the conversation. And that's something that we always tried to strive for, was how can we tweak it to add that value? You know, kickers aren't valuable because you look at number one and you look at number 12, there's barely a difference between them, right?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter what you do to that position. You're never, like, I don't care if you made a field goal worth 100 points and you left everything else as a normal fantasy league, just because that kicker is going to score 18,000 points for the season doesn't mean he's worthy of pick 1-1, because it's all relative, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
because, yeah, you're at that point, your 12th kicker is still going to score
17,500 points.
Yeah.
Right. So it just, what I say is, when you're looking to create your league, look at how you can impact the scoring to try and elevate the value of all the positions to be as close in value as possible.
And I think you touched on this earlier, and this is probably my biggest takeaway from this, is that don't be afraid to add roster slots to your league.
Yep.
And add active roster slots to your league, because, again, you shouldn't have a situation where the waiver wire has so much talent that it's a wins above replacement level net zero with players you might drop. In that case, what happens is nobody makes trades in that league.
Right.
Because you can always just go and get a replacement player of equal value to the guy that you would be dropping.
And I was going to say, that's where I also think you have to decide what kind of league do you want, right? If you want a league that's pretty much draft it and forget about it, you decide how many roster spots and how many bench spots you want. And if you want more action, then how does that change? You have more bench spots so that you can encourage more trades, right? If you want more waiver wire activity, then you make your benches smaller so that people can't just, you know, grab and hoard players and stuff like that. Those are the types of things. Just think about it. Think outside the box. And like I said, play with...
One of the funnest formats I've joined in the last couple of years in the league is kind of taking a step back historically to when fantasy sports first became popular in the early 80s. Basically, I joined a league that basically was a NFL rotisserie style format, where you had players under contract for 2 to 3 years. Those players' contracts, after 3 years, you'd get the chance to increase the value of their contracts, extend them if you want to, but at a cost to you. Again, based on salaries, it created a whole new element. I mean, I've been playing rotisserie-style baseball since the early 80s.
So,
and I had never really done that in a football standpoint until about 3 years ago, and I absolutely love it.
So I will tell you this. So 16-team full IDP, that's what I do. Most of them, we call them dynasty, but they're truly contract, right? They're not true dynasty. They're contract-driven leagues. And my favorite was the one that I created, Full Impact, because that was where your defensive set that you started impacted your opponent's offensive scores. So you think about, like, if a defense was at the goal line and they had a goal line in, right, what's that going to do? That's going to limit what the running back can do, but a wide receiver could take advantage of that. So we would make it to where, and I'm just going to throw a number off the top of my head, say if you run goal line where you're running, say, five defensive linemen and four linebackers and just two cornerbacks, it's going to deduct 20% of your opponent's running back score, but it's going to add 40% to their wide receiver scores. And it allowed, and you don't know who they're going to necessarily start because we hid starters, so you didn't know who they were starting. So you would make an assumption of, hey, I'm facing Christian McCaffrey this week. I'm putting something in that's going to deduct points from him, and I'll take my chances at giving points to his wide receivers. That was one of the most intricate leagues I was ever in, probably my most favorite. But the next one that I loved the most was called GMX. We ran it at the Huddle. GMX stood for the General Manager Experience Dynasty, but it was contract league, and it was performance-based. So when a player's contract was up, we had you could make them franchise players and I forget what the other one was, but they got raises. Their salary got a raise based on their performance level, and it allowed them kind of like to go into free agency and you could match type thing. One of the most and we had a salary cap, of course, on top of a contract cap. So you had double that you had to worry about. Just it was just awful hard to manage from a commissioner standpoint, but absolutely the best league I was ever in. If anybody ever wants the rules to it, let me know. I think I could probably still get them and pass them along to you.
And worst case scenario, you know, it's fun to think about all the additional things you can do to your leagues, but the most important thing is choose settings that you like, that your friends that your league are going to enjoy, and that everyone's going to find as competitive and an equally competitive balance for all the teams involved. Again, whether you're starting out for the first time or if you're a 30-plus year veteran of fantasy sports, you want something that is going to keep every team interested all season long, and in the case of dynasty leagues, even during the offseason, because ultimately this is about having fun, right?
That is right. And the other thing that people worry about is managing other people's trades. Look, collusion happens, but you almost never can prove it. The best way to handle collusion is to make sure you have good owners, but don't manage somebody else's team. We can go back and find examples of when Arian Foster went on to have a fantastic year, and if somebody was traded for him early in the season, they would have been like, there's no way you're giving things up for that guy that, and he shouldn't have happened, and he went on being running back one by a ton, right? There's plenty of examples like that. Just if you find somebody and you think they're cheating, don't invite them back next year. You got to have a good set of group and owners and make sure that whatever rules you have in place, you live with them. If you find something needs to be changed because you're like, oh, we missed that, it's got to take a majority to change the rule. And really, if you can avoid it, you don't change it mid-season or anytime during the season, you address it for the next year.
Exactly.
You know where else you don't change stuff?
Well, I make a lot of changes on a weekly basis. Typically, Sunday morning, while sitting on the toilet while I try to put together my DFS lineups.
Oh, that's a little more information. But yeah, technically, yes, other than changing your lineups, DFS doesn't change. You know what you're getting into and you know what you have to operate with, right?
Well, yeah, unless you're playing on DraftKings this week where you don't get to play the Buffalo and Miami teams in the main slate, whereas you can play those guys on FanDuel.
Well, they are in prime time, so, hey, why don't we do this? I think it's a good time. Let's throw it over to DFS stuff. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Last DFS of the season. Set the over-under, my friend.
There's just too many variables in play this week, so I'm going to go with four.
Four. Four, he said. Four.
I feel like there's three clear ones, and then it's a question mark after that.
it's a push, but I'm taking the over. I'm taking the over.
I'm gonna, and
that's excluding the Bills and the Dolphins from the main slate.
Yes, I am not including those in the players I chose.
I did not either. All right, start us off. Who are we paying up for at quarterback?
At quarterback, one name that just jumped off the board at me based on his price and also the matchup. It's Dak Prescott at Washington, 8,000 on DraftKings, 8,700 on FanDuel. Prescott gets the defense as well, the most passing touchdowns and the third most passing yards on the season. This includes allowing 331 passing yards and four touchdowns to Dak back in week 12. The division is on the line, so Dallas will be playing their starters the entire game. This is going to be a game that Dallas needs to win, and they are going to lay it on.
Wow. There could be some weather in that game this weekend. Probably not, but there could be, just for what it's worth. The guy I'm paying up for is actually a little bit cheaper than Dak is this week, and EA is on the road, but he's got a fantastic matchup facing a team that over the past month has given up the seventh most points to the quarterback position, and that is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I really thought last week was going to be the big breakout week for Patrick and Travis Kelce. If it wasn't.
I know.
I'm sitting there waiting, and it hurts me to see him not play up to his ability and to see the offense around him just kind of be stagnant.
Yep.
It's a good play. You're right. He's on the road. It's at Los Angeles. Weather's not going to be a factor there, obviously. Nope. Chargers basically have given up. The only reason I didn't go with Patrick is because I have a strange feeling we might just see a lot of Isaiah Pacheco in this game.
We very well may. I do think that Kansas City wants to use this as a get-right game for going into the playoffs, though. And I also think that based on his recent production, you're not going to see a large ownership stake in him.
That is also a very good point. And they do have a little something to play for still. I think that it's definitely something that they've got to get themselves right before the playoffs. So it's a decent play. And he's cheaper than Dak, so certainly that going too.
And for what it's worth, if Josh Allen was available on both sides, he'd have been my pay-up. So who is
you're not excited about Miami's defense without X?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Who's your stay away?
This one here is Brock Purdy versus the Rams, 6,900 on DraftKings, 7,900 on FanDuel. Purdy produced a mediocre 230 yards and two touchdowns against the awful Commanders last week. This comes out after being completely shut out by the Ravens the previous week. They've got the number one seed sewn up. He's probably going to play, but there's zero chance he plays the entire game. I assume we're going to see a fair amount of Sam Darnold at the very least in the second half, if not three quarters of the game. So, yeah, don't use Purdy this week.
Well, I'll give you a match because I wrote two names down. Purdy felt like a punt to me, though, because I think that people are going to be aware that he shouldn't play the whole game, and you're probably only going to get about a half out of him, maybe two and a half quarters tops. I'd be shocked if it's more than that, honestly. But then again, he's a system quarterback, so if he goes down, I'm sure they could just plug Sam Darnold in and they'll be fine. So I'll give you a match for that. But the other guy that I'm staying away from is your pay-up. I'm staying away from Dak Prescott. Weather, slight concern, not much. On the road, concern. I'm sorry, Dallas isn't the same team on the road. Yes, they need to win. That's a plus. Over the past month, Washington is 23rd in points allowed to the quarterback position. When I look at all the other matchups, none of them really stood out to me other than Tua, and I can't stay away from Tua because he's not on the slate. So I thought I would go against the grain and tell people, you know what, at this point, I'm going to stay away from Dak this week.
It's understandable. I am now looking at his road splits here, and he's definitely struggled on the road this season. At the Giants in week one, 143 and no touchdowns. At the Cardinals, 249 and one. At the 49ers, a tough matchup there, 153 and one. At the Eagles, he absolutely kicked their butt. So
yeah.
I won't comment too much on that one for your sake. Two touchdowns against the Panthers and a pretty solid defense. Got shut out against the Bills in Buffalo. And only 253 and two against the Dolphins on the road. So, yeah, you're probably right about that home road splits. I'll have to look at that a little bit closer. But his game. He has to win this one.
And, well, here's the thing. I'm actually going to go really far out on a limb and tell you that, and this might be the homer in me hoping for it, Washington's going to win that game.
Wow.
All right. Who is your value play with that?
Well, you're not going to like this one because I'm going to take Tyrod Taylor versus the Eagles.
I don't blame
He's 5,300
you.
On DraftKings, 7,000 on FanDuel. Philly ranks bottom five in completions allowed, passing yards allowed, and passing touchdowns allowed. This includes allowing three or more passing touchdowns to opposing quarterbacks in seven different games this season.
So I kind of have two chances for you to match me here. I wrote down Tyrod first, but I crossed him out probably because I don't want to have that thought about him going against my Eagles. But also because I keep thinking at some point the real Eagles defense has to show up, right? So that's part of it. But the other was the guy I picked, I don't know if he's going to start. So it's like, but the matchup is too prime. So that's why I put two names down. So I crossed out of Tyrod, and he's kind of tied to, if Nick Mullins is announced as a starter, he's my value play.
I think, yes, totally, 100%.
It's an absolute fantastic matchup if Mullins starts. That's if we know we're going to get him. If not, pivot to Tyrod. So I'll give us a match there. How's that?
Yes.
So that's one match, right? One and a half. Yes. Said I give you Brock. So we have two matches.
Yes.
Okay. Who are you paying up for at running back?
I'm going to take Rashad White at Carolina. He's 7,600 on DraftKings, 7,700 on FanDuel. Carolina's allowed a league worst 24 total touchdowns to opposing running backs, including two last week to Travis Etienne, who hasn't done much of anything in the last few weeks. So if Etienne can get done against this defense, I think Rashad White can too.
Do not hate that, but I really thought we were going to match here based on an earlier comment. And maybe it's because he's too far down the list. I'm paying up for Isaiah Pacheco this week. One way or another.
I'll pay up for both of them.
Okay. One way or another, I might be wrong on Pat. I don't think I'm going to be wrong on Pacheco. They both could actually hit. He's facing a team that over the past month, 12th most points allowed to the running back position. And honestly, everybody above it, I'm not in love with. I don't love Breece Hall going to New England. Not a horrible matchup like you would think it is, but I don't love it. You know, you can't use the two running backs for Miami. ATN, I don't love that matchup either on the road against Tennessee. Kamara's dinged up. Rashad White, I get it, but it's on the road. And again, it could be more. There could be some weather involved there too. I do think he's a safer play. But I like saving a little bit of money with Pacheco, even though he does cost more than White on FanDuel.
Like I said, I have no problem playing both of them this week.
And Kyren Williams, I don't know. The Rams are not locked in. They can fluctuate from 6 to 7. I don't know. I really don't know how much the Rams are going to play their starters. That's what concerns me.
I'm kind of in the same boat there, too. And again, we know for a fact that San Francisco won't play their starters the whole game. That includes their defensive high-end players,
sure,
too.
Right. But it's still, you know, there's still players. Sometimes those backup players get in. They want to show tape when they can, right? So, Anyway, who are you staying away from?
Well, you mentioned my stay away, and my stay away is the guy who ran wild against Carolina last week, Travis Etienne. This week he's at Tennessee. His price jumped up to 7,300 on DraftKings, 8,800 on FanDuel, despite doing absolutely nothing the rest of the season. Tennessee, they've allowed 8 rushing touchdowns all season, only 2 over their last 4 weeks. And prior to blowing up against that Carolina defense last week, Etienne had averaged only 11.5 PPR points per game over his prior 7 games. Yuck.
I get it. I do. The guy I'm staying away from really far down the list, considering how I don't usually veer very far off of, you know, the top prices when we're doing pay-ups and stay-aways. I'm trying to wait for my window to open up here at the number I want so I can mention the correct number. Yep, there they are. I'm staying away from Arthur Smith's running back, Bijan Robinson. 6,600, 6,900 doesn't seem like a bad deal, but it's on the road in New Orleans against a team, the Saints team, that over the past month is giving up the 27th fewest points to the running back position. And you can't trust Arthur Smith. It could be a Tyler Algier day, even if there's a good day to be had. So
it could be a Cordarrelle Patterson game.
It could be a Cordarrelle Patterson game. Correct. I just think that Bijan feels like a trap at $6,600, $6,900, where people are going to say, oh, I should run to that. That's a good price. Stay away.
I totally agree.
Okay. Who's the value play at running back? This I actually think we could match on.
I'm going to go with Ezekiel Elliott versus the Jets. He's 5,900 on DraftKings, 6,700 on FanDuel. The Jets, get this, the Jets have allowed 9 total touchdowns to the running back position over their last 4 games. They've allowed 6 over the last 2 games. And Zeke, well, he scored in 3 of his last 4 games.
So we match. I picked Zeke. I saw a tweet the other day. I don't know who it was. I don't remember the specific time frame. I don't know if it was the last 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, but it was a comparison between Zeke and Tony Pollard fantasy points. almost double, I think, Zeke in favor over Tony Pollard. Yes, Price is not where it should be based on what his role is right now. Ugly game. Going to be a lot of handoffs, I believe. And, yeah, I think Zeke makes a solid play.
Yeah, he is the New England offense right now. He might be the only offense in this game entirely.
Yeah, he very well could be. You're absolutely right with that. All right, so we've got three matches. We need five, so we've got two left that we need with six positions to go, or I should say six selections to go. At wide receiver, I'm going to tell you you're going to have a total of four chances to match between my pay-ups and my value play, and it's because they're tied to each other.
Okay.
So go ahead. I guess I should have factored that in when I said you gave your four number.
I chose Dak Prescott as my number one quarterback this week, so I'm going to choose his number one receiver, CeeDee Lamb, as my pay-up wide receiver, despite the fact that his FanDuel price has entered Tyreek territory at $10,000. That does seem a little high. It's going up against Washington, though, and as we already talked about, Washington is really bad against the pass. They'll have the most yards and the second most TDs to opposing wide receivers. And for Lamb's case, he has either scored and or top 100 yards in 11 straight games.
Okay. We are not going to match. I will tell you this. I wrote CeeDee Lamb down and I crossed him off. So now, I know we normally have you give your pay up, I give my pay up, you give your stay away, I give my stay away, value play. What we need to do now is you need to give your value play. And then I can give my pay up and my value play.
My value play is going to be nowhere near your list.
Okay.
It is Parker Washington at Tennessee. His price is $3,400 on DraftKings, $4,900 on FanDuel. With Christian Kirk out, with Jamal Agnew out, and with Zay Jones already missing eight games and repeatedly questionable for this week, somebody has to catch passes for Jacksonville. Washington did nothing last week, but he has been involved more over the prior 4 weeks since Christian Kirk's injury, including scoring in two of those two games. Meanwhile, Tennessee ranks fifth in yards allowed and third in receptions allowed to the position, so the opportunities will be there for Mr. Washington.
I don't hate that. You're right, but he's not close to what I have. So now I can give you mine. So the two names I wrote down for my pay-up was A.J. Brown and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Okay? If you pay up for A.J. Brown, then my value play is Jamison Williams. I love the matchup. That's probably going to be the week. I've been riding Jamison Williams without having a real true hit all season, it seems like, right? So that's probably the way I would lean, A.J. Brown, Jamison. However, if you pay up for Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't want you paying up for Jamison. Most likely, I'm expecting, and nothing's been announced yet, but I'm expecting Devontae Smith to not play this week because he was seen on crutches due to an ankle sprain on the Eagles that he suffered on the Eagles' last offensive possession. So Mr. Two Touchdown, Julio Jones, is who my value play is. So Amon-Ra St. Brown, pay up, Julio Jones, value play, A.J. Brown, pay up, Jamison Williams, value play. I'm probably going A.J. and Jamison, though, if I really had to have my druthers. And that's because I do think, look, greasy wheel gets the grease. We know A.J. Brown is noisy grease, is a noisy wheel. So,
do you remember what's Julio's real name? I can never remember it.
Nope.
All I know is it's some weird combination, including a Q. I'm just envisioning to myself multiple sets that have A.J. Brown, whatever Julio's real name, and Olamide Zaccheaus on the field at the same time. And Quez Watkins, potentially.
I'm looking for his real name.
They should be able to fit the names on the bottom of the screen if they list them all as starters.
Quintoris. Is that right?
Quintoris. It's something like that, yeah.
I'm opening it up because it's so small. I got to make sure I say it right here. Hold on. It is, because that sounds, it is, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, Quinn, Quintoris, Quintoris Lopez Jones Jr. And here's the funny part. On Wikipedia, they put the phonetic spelling of Julio, but not the first name. I'm not kidding you. H-O-O, all capitals, dash, Lee, dash, O.
You know what it is? They decided to use Julio because he just got tired of spelling the name.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, no, I did not know that was how you said his first name. But I do find it hilarious that they used Julio and they wrote that out phonetically. That makes zero sense. Mr. Julio has a birthday coming up in February, too. February 8th. He'll be 75, I think. I'm kidding. All right.
Well, so who is your stay away?
My stay away is a guy that has been a huge value all year for non-DFS stuff, and I think he's provided value in DFS. His team needs a win this week, but they're on the road, and I hate the matchup. Mike Evans, Carolina. Last month, only two teams have given up fewer points to the wide receiver position than they have. They play ugly games. People don't score in Carolina for whatever reason. They rub off on them, right? We saw it happen with Dallas and some others. So I'm not liking Mike Williams this weekend at all. Mike Evans,
you mean, but yes, I totally agree. Mike Evans got a tough matchup there with Carolina. And it doesn't help that Baker Mayfield's a little dinged up as well. And it sounds like he's going to play, but he's still questionable going into this weekend. I think that you can never discount Mike Evans scoring a touchdown because that's what he does.
True.
But yeah, the price tag, especially the $8,400 on FanDuel, just is, it's really not tenable. That's the fifth highest priced guy on FanDuel.
Yeah.
That's not very good for that situation. Not the guy I chose. The guy I ended up settling on is a guy who has really kind of been junky for most of the season, but it's not really his fault. And he'll be the first person to tell you that. The issue he's had is that his team has a horrible quarterback right now, but he is coming off a 2-touchdown game, and that's Davante Adams versus Denver. His price tag isn't too horrible at $7,900 on DraftKings, $7,700 on FanDuel, but because he just scored 2 touchdowns, he's going to see a boost in ownership this week.
Yeah.
Well, he does get a boost in ownership this week. He also gets to face Patrick Surtain. Not optimal.
Not suboptimal. Absolutely. I did have another name written down, by the way. I crossed him out. I didn't think to say anything, but same reasoning behind the whole Brock thing. I had Debo Samuel as a stay away. I don't think he plays more than a couple quarters, honestly.
Exactly. Again, they saw last year they had injuries to their quarterback position in the playoffs. I think that they're going to be very, very protective of their star players. They're all going to play some this game, and that's where people are going to get suckered in.
Yep.
But with the exception, I mean, again, this is the week if you're going to start, like, say, Ross Dwelly or Charlie Warner or Jawan Jennings, Ronnie Bell, Elijah Mitchell, Jordan Mason. These are the guys who are going to get most of the snaps for San Francisco.
Yeah, and the other thing that I'll point out is
I love Ronnie Bell this week, by the way, too. So.
Even if Debo does play, I guarantee he doesn't carry the ball. They're not on.
Oh, not at all. No chance.
Right? I mean, just not going to happen. So it's not worth the risk. So yeah, I'll be shocked. So I felt he was a punt, so that's why I didn't actually call him out as a stay away. All right, let's head on over to tight end where we have to get two matches to hit the over.
Well, I don't know if we will here, although I will tell you I've got two stay aways.
Okay.
So maybe that might help us with that.
That might. That'd be nice. Who are you paying up for first?
I'm going to pay up for Trey McBride versus Seattle. The price tag is $6,000 on DraftKings, $6,700 on FanDuel. The matchup's kind of middling. I've actually got Seattle ranked 15th against the tight end position this season. But Arizona's shorthanded in their pass-catching department right now, and McBride has seen at least 7 targets and at least 5 receptions in each of his last 7 games. So he's getting massive target share. Arizona really doesn't have anything to play for, but they certainly aren't going to be benching any of their players this week. I think McBride has another big game in him against the Seattle defense. Again, that's just kind of middle of the pack.
So shockingly, we actually have a match. And like you, I don't love the matchup. It's middling. It's right middle of the pack, honestly. But it is at home. They are shorthanded at wide receiver. And I see that rapport building with Kyler, right? And he's just the safest of the bunch. So as an example, David Njoku has a fantastic matchup, third best matchup that you can ask for this week, right? But is he going to play? They don't have many wide receivers. If I knew he was playing and playing 4 quarters and you possibly have Amari Cooper out, maybe Elijah Moore out, absolutely, right? But yeah, it's just not worth the risk. And I had another guy that I had written down, but I crossed him off too. And I'll explain that a little bit later. So I wound up going with Trey McBride. So we have a push right now.
Well, and that leads into my stay away. I said I have two guys.
I do too.
The first one being David Njoku, who I do not think will play much, if at all, in this game. Much like the San Francisco team, Cleveland is kind of locked in where they're going to be. I don't see that they really need to play David Njoku a lot. He's a veteran. He knows what he's doing out there. It probably means it's going to be a good week for Harrison Bryant owners.
Yeah.
But because David Njoku is probably not going to play the full game, if much at all, then, yeah, I'm going to leave him out of my daily fantasy lineups. But I'm also going to leave out, as we talked about earlier, San Francisco not playing their starters very much. I'm going to avoid George Kittle at 5,200 on 6,600 because I don't think he's going to play very much this week either.
Wow. We had four chances to match at stay away between us and didn't hit on any of them. I'm staying away from, first of all, I think saying Njoku, it's warranted to point it out, but I felt like it was a punt because they are locked in. There is no kind of like the other teams. They're fifth. Nothing's happening. They can't go to sixth. They can't go to seventh. They can't go to fourth. They can't go to third. They're fifth. They know where they are.
I totally agree with you, but I think it all comes down to the fact, though, that as I mentioned in the news earlier, Stefanski refuses to say at this point whether his starters will get any time.
And hey, if Njoku only plays the first quarter.
Matchup. Cincinnati is one of the worst teams in the league against the position.
Oh, they absolutely
and
are.
In Kittle's case, it's also a great matchup because the Rams are one of the worst teams in the league against the position.
Yep. So for what it's worth, if he only plays the first quarter, that may not be such a bad thing. Look what he did last week.
It won't be horrible, no. Like you said, again, they will be without Elijah Moore. He is not playing this week. There's a very good chance Cooper doesn't play with nothing on the line.
Yep.
That leaves, what, Cedric Tillman, David Bell?
Yep.
Can't even name their other receiver because they traded away Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either. All right, so here's who I'm staying away from. I wrote down Travis Kelce as my pay-up, and I said, I can't do it. Like, that's just wanting it to happen, right? I can't will it. DFS, you don't will
it. Again, it's a good matchup for Kelce.
So I wrote Kelce down as my stay-away. And then I was like, but you know who else has a really bad matchup?
Sam LaPorta.
Yes, that's who I thought we were going to match on. So I have LaPorta and Kelce as my stay away, and LaPorta was the one I actually circled.
Yeah, no, I considered LaPorta too, and again, it's not a good matchup. The one position that the Minnesota defense has been good against all season, well, technically two positions. They've been good against the running back position, and they've been elite against the tight end position this season. Yes, they're playing shorthanded right now on defense. Yes, the team has kind of given up on the season already, but I don't see. I think with LaPorta this week, you're chasing a touchdown.
Yes, yep. All right, let's see if we can do something that we don't do very often: match at value play tight end. Who you got?
Well, before I give you my value play tight end, I want to shout out my value play tight end from last week, Juwan Johnson.
Yeah,
he had a pretty good game.
He did. I don't want to shout mine out.
My value play tight end this week will be facing the shorthanded Cleveland Browns. That's Tanner Hudson of the Cincinnati Bengals. 3,100 on DraftKings, 4,900 on FanDuel. Over the last 4 weeks, Cleveland, who started the season absolutely elite against the tight end position, they've given up an average of 9 catches, 71 yards, and 1 receiving touchdown to opposing tight ends over the last 4 games. Hudson, for his behalf, he's got 4 more targets in 7 of his last 9 games. He's obviously going to be more involved if the team is shorthanded again without T. Higgins this coming week. So give me Tanner Hudson versus the Cleveland team that has kind of forgotten how to play the position.
So the first name I wrote down was a guy that I've said a few times this year, and he's hit a couple times and he hasn't hit a couple times. And what factored into me wind up saying, no, I'm going to cross him off. He's not even just going to be an extra, hey, you got 2 chances here, was Higbee. I just, again, I don't know.
He's feeling like a shoulder injury right now, too.
Yeah, he's not right. I don't know how much they're going to want to play him with not much on the line. They can't really change things up. You know what I mean? Like, he was my value play last week, and what did he do here? Let's take a look. He didn't do much of it. Oh, I'm sorry, 6 for 62. That's pretty solid for a value play. But I really wanted to push down down, down, down. I wanted to try and see if I could hit somebody in the sub 3,000 range. So, you know, I looked at the likes of Jonnu Smith and Mike Gesicki, and I just couldn't do it. I really couldn't. And I really thought I was going to be tricky, and I didn't think there was any way that you would match on this. I actually wrote down Tanner Hudson. I never expected it. I looked at Cade Otten, knowing that I think that Mike Evans could have a tough week. You know what I mean? I looked at Juwan Johnson again. I tried to get cute, and I was like, I want to go as cheap as I can.
Well, I will give you a chance to match me.
I did.
Someone that's sub 3,000 that isn't even on the list, because I made a mistake when I cut and pasted.
Oh, God. Oh, God. You want me to match you without even knowing the name and trying to think of who's missing?
Let's put it this way. He will be starting because the other starter is likely to be out. The other starter is on the list, but for whatever reason, I missed this when I copied it over.
Are we going to go with – we're going to go with the Chicago Bear, Robert Tonyan. Is he even on the list? I didn't even look to see if he's on the list.
He is not on the list, but Cole Kmet did play last week despite the injury concern, so that's not the player.
Okay. Well, that was my guess.
The player who is probably going to miss this game is Michael Meyer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he missed last week, too. Yes.
Which means that Austin Hooper, who has caught three passes in each of the last 2 weeks, at 2,700 on DraftKings and 4,600 on FanDuel, is a way, way deep, even off the current board sleeper pick for tight end.
I have to tell you, I'd rather pay up for David Njoku if I knew he was only going to play the first quarter. At least I don't have to worry about Mayer not getting any passes completed in quarter two through four.
Good point.
So I truly can't believe that was a match, and that did put us over. Gave us five. We beat Vegas for the final week of the year. We went long on a week that we talked prior to recording, saying, oh, with what we're doing, we're probably going to end on a shorter note tonight. No, we're long, maybe as long as we've been all year long, but that's okay. anyway, that's where we're at. So I think it was a good show. Hopefully people enjoyed it and the previous shows that we put on for them this year. We may be back around draft time. Can't guarantee that. We'll definitely be back later this summer. In parting, anything you want to add for the few listeners we may have?
Well, again, continue to pay attention to the huddle over the next few weeks, because we will still have the Daily Dominator each week during the postseason. Allow you to get your DFS picks in for the wild card, the divisional, and the league championship rounds, along with a special release we do every year now, which is for showdown and captain slates for the Super Bowl.
There you go. And, of course, you can always reach out to Harley on the site formerly known as Twitter, at New Clear Harley. You can reach out to me at Steve Gallo NFL. And, of course, like Harley said, check out the huddle. If you don't have a subscription, treat yourself to one. It's good for a full calendar year. It doesn't expire at the end of the season. And you won't regret it. Trust me, you won't. There's just tons of great content on there. And until then, get blitzed responsibly. Cheers.